Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have the pleasure of talking with author Lisa Marie Alano about her new children's book, The Secret Cave. So Lisa Marie was born in 1954 in Boston and was the only child of a first-generation Italian-American. She was married in 1976 to her late husband, Frank, and they had three children, Genevieve, Joe, and Valerie. And so far, she has one grandson, Jedi. Lisa is trained in motivational speaking and handwriting analysis. She loves to cook, enjoys her family, and has a passion for animals, which is very evident in her life in many ways, including her extended family of three large dogs and two cats. Since the age of 16, Lisa knew she wanted to be a writer. The Secret Cave is her first published book, and she has many more on the way. And so we're very excited to have Lisa on the phone today to talk about her new book, The Secret Cave. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Lisa.
Well, thank you. It's very nice to be here.
Well, great. So, you know, I've read on your website, or it was a review or somewhere, and it was a one-liner about your book that reads, "The Secret Cave, a captivating adventure mystery that will take you on a journey that is sure to entertain, enlighten, educate, and stir the imagination." And, you know, I'm really hoping we can touch on each of these areas while we're talking today. But I'd like you to actually start by giving listeners an idea of your professional background and then how it led to you to publish your first book.
Well, let's see, my professional background. I have been trained in motivational speaking and kind of lost it somewhere along the way. But when I realized I wanted to be a writer, I kind of put it back together again and decided that I wanted to rewrite this book that I had actually written the draft of years ago when my kids were little. They are now all grown, obviously. And I remembered my motivational training. My husband passed away, and, you know, life gets a little difficult when those things happen. And I decided to I had a choice. I could either go get a regular job, which there's nothing wrong with, but I have a terrible sleep disorder, so it's hard for me to get up in the morning.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I decided, well, you know what, why don't I practice what I've preached for years and follow my own dream? And I did, and that's why I rewrote The Secret Cave. Worked really hard to get it out there and get it published and motivate other people to follow their dreams. So the book has a lot of different aspects to it besides being just a children's book.
Yes, it absolutely does. You know, I didn't realize that you had rewrote at this point. When did you originally write The Secret Cave?
I originally wrote it when my kids were, let's see, oh my, probably 10 to 12, somewhere around that area, maybe 8, 10, and 12.
Mm-hmm. So they were that age that this book is targeting, the age range. Oh, okay, great. So why don't you tell us what happens in this book?
Oh, most certainly. What happened, first of all, one day I took my kids to Disney World and went on the imagination ride at Epcot Center and started stirring my imagination. Then we went on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, and I pictured my kids in this mystery, fun kind of adventure. And years later, I decided, well, you know, let me write a story. And I pictured my son and his best friend, Ronnie, who was the other main character, and these are real people, going on an adventure, you know, families on a vacation. And what would happen if, you know, what would really happen? Well, the teenage girls would probably be doing their nails and doing their thing, talking about boys and whatnot. The younger girls, the two younger sisters, would be playing and making mud pies, playing in the sand, doing things that little girls 8 to 10 do. And the boys, turning 13, well, you know, they kind of want to get away on their own. So they go into an adventure. They go into the woods, and they've got backpacks and full of food, and they've got all kinds of good stuff in there. And, of course, they have something like a slingshot. Typical boys, you know, you've got boys in the woods with a slingshot, you're going to have some problems.
Sure.
Or adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And let me clarify at the beginning, this is an adventure mystery. It's not fantasy. It's totally adventure mystery. Very possibly could happen, but I kept it so that there's nothing offensive in here.
Great.
You know, for our parents or librarians, so on and so forth. So the boys are continuing, they're taking a stroll, and they're playing with a slingshot and shooting at the berries at the top of a tree. And when they get to the top of the tree, they look out in the distance and they see these giant white rocks that are shaped like a skull. So, of course, they have to investigate. And when they start to investigate, it leads them on a very fun, exciting, dangerous adventure that uncovers a 300-year-old mystery.
Wow.
It's fun. Some of the things they get into, well, let's see, there's a mystery note, there's a diary, there's a trip back in time, there's the clues, there's a skeleton called the Spike, and I usually tell kids what that really is. There's a green trunk, there's a midnight adventure, underground death, but that has a question mark. Mm. And at the very end, there's a surprise discovery. So they do uncover all kinds of fun things to get to a possible treasure.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a fast reading and just exciting, exciting story for kids.
So I've heard
from
some kids.
Mm-hmm.
Pleasantly.
You know, yeah, I've heard that kids are really enjoying this book. You know, there's something about a mystery that really engages the young mind and encourages them to tap into their imagination. So what are your thoughts on kind of the lure of the adventure mystery genre for children? And then how did you keep the clues and the action in this story enticing for the young reader?
Okay, good question. repeat the first one again.
the lure of the adventure mystery for this genre.
Well, I mean, personally, that's just something I've always liked, was adventure and mystery. But even if you look at little tiny kids, little ones like my grandson's age, who's almost two, they're so curious.
Yes.
If you give them a box, just a box, they want to know what's in that box. If it can be opened, they will open it. You give them a jar of cookies, they want to know what kind of cookies are in there. And do you ever see little kids go through their parents' purse? They just pull everything out of their purse,
mm-hmm.
put a diaper bag. So as little as tiny little babies, they're curious.
Mm-hmm.
And once they find what they're looking for, they find something of a surprise, it's just a lure of not knowing and the curiosity of wanting to find out mixed with a little bit of adventure kind of gets the adrenaline going. So I think that's the lure for children and adults.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us like a mystery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what keeps it going? See, I remember the second question. What keeps it going is, there's a couple of things. I try to keep each mystery a separate mystery.
Mm.
When they solve one, they get into another one. And they solve them differently. There's different ways. They have to use their brain. They have to, some of it's just by chance. They have to kind of be careful not to let their parents find out, because they want to keep this to themselves at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want their folks or their kid sisters poking their noses in,
sure.
Which of course they do.
Of course.
I've also written the clues in rhyme. When they do find the old diary, the clues are written in rhyme, so it's a poem. So as you're reading the clues, you're thinking, well, what on earth does this mean? So I think the clues themselves are a lure to keep the reader wanting to read more and find out how they solve. What on earth does it mean? You know, what can it mean?
Mm-hmm.
So,
how interesting. I love that step-by-step process that
you
talk about.
Then I kind of cheated a little. I made each chapter end so that they're going to want to go into the next one.
Mm. Kids are going to have a hard time putting this book down.
I hope so.
You know, you mentioned that children are kind of born with that curiosity, and that actually was going to lead me to the next question that I had for you, whether you think that imagination is really inherent in all children, or if you think for some it needs to be cultivated, and, you know, books and resources like this can help that.
I agree that I think everybody's born with an imagination. I think everybody can cultivate it, but I think as we get older, and I mean just as children, I should say, they start to develop different things that they can do well. Perhaps some children are mathematically oriented, And a lot of times I've noticed that a lot of kids that are mathematically oriented and very logical and very scientific need the imagination process to be brought out. They have it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to bring it out. But then you have other kids like me when I was younger, and actually still am, who was terrible at things like mathematics and logical. I still can't find directions, I mean, to this day. But creativity,
mm-hmm.
it just flows. It's just something natural. So I think, you know, we're all good at something, and my goodness, if we were all good at creativity, we'd have no mathematicians out there, and nobody would know how to do accounting. So, but
that would
yeah,
be an interesting world.
That'd be a strange world. See, that'd be a good idea for a next book.
Yeah. So do you think being an only child growing up helped you build your imagination?
I'd have to say I had it anyway, but it didn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't hurt. I pretended that, you know, my sofa was never my sofa. My bed was never my bed. I was always on an island, on a rock, on a raft, in a boat somewhere, whether I was alone, and my poor friends had to deal with this. So when I was with my friends, I would make them imagine things, too.
Oh, but I bet you were a lot of fun.
Either was a lot of fun or a real pain. I don't know. Either or.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about the chapters of your book really kind of standing on their own as far as how the story progresses. At the end of each chapter, you have a special section called Stop and Think. Can you tell us about this?
Certainly. The Stop and Think section is, well, there are questions at the end of every chapter, and they make the reader stop and think, or the parent reading,
mm-hmm.
and tell the child stop and think. And the questions at the end are to spark and motivate the imagination. They're not your typical school questions that ask you what happened on page 2 or what did Joe say to Anna or what did Genevieve say to Valerie. What happened? It's what would you do? What would you do if you were the author? You know, what would those big white rocks in the distance be to you? And some of the answers are just amazing. I mean, it could be anything. Maybe to them, it's dinosaur bones. Maybe to them, it's a fairy tale world, a fairy princess, monsters, ghosts. Could be anything, but they're using their imagination. So every question at every chapter is to make them stop and think. I have it at the beginning of the book that I'm not trying to have them guess what I wrote. There's never a wrong answer. And what a wonderful question to be able to answer if there's no such thing as a wrong answer, ever.
Mm.
All about them.
Mm-hmm.
And it sparks their creativity, whether they have it or whether they aren't as strong in that area. It's going to make you think, whether even a kid, a grown-up, I mean, would think.
Mm-hmm. It's a very unique it's to include this in your book. It's very, very unique. I haven't seen that very often.
Oh, well, good.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's great. So tell us about your main characters and how you make these characters so relatable to young readers. You know, you're talking about the stop and think section that really mm-hmm. that's really drawing the reader into the story and making it quite interactive. But also, you know, your characters, they really, I don't know, they children will really relate to them. Can you tell us a little more about your character?
Sure. Well, I've tried to make the characters the same but different. Like the two boys are Joe. Actually, it's Joe and Joey. But my son is Joe, and Joey's, well, we used his middle name, Ronnie, because it's too confusing.
Mm-hmm.
This is really the way they are. Ronnie is the smart class clown. He's funny. He's silly to this day, and he's almost 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's funny. He's comical. He teases my son to no end. To this day, and they've known each other since they were kids. He's always eating, always thinking about food, and relates everything to food. So I used that. I also used his real character flaws, which is, do I have to get up and get that? And he tends to be lazy. And he knows it, but it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And now Joe, on the other hand, my son, isn't the class clown. He's real smart with the comebacks, but he's always had a short fuse, which he's got a handle on now. Ronnie also has a handle on his comic act, but I made it so that Joe gets annoyed with Ronnie very quickly and just, because they tease each other. So I made them real, and their character strengths and their character flaws are going to relate to kids that age. The two younger sisters, Anna and Emily, are actually, I don't know the girls, but I know one of their parents. And I kind of took their personalities. And Emily's just sweet and kind and cares about every little animal and every little bug. And Anna is this tiny little cute, adorable little princess who's just strong and feisty and just isn't afraid of anything, isn't afraid of bugs or the dark or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured there's two relatable ones. And the girls are Genevieve and Valerie, who are actually my daughters. And Genevieve is the leader, and she still is. She's the oldest child, and she's the leader. Hates to get dirty, ew, bugs. Whereas Valerie really did and still does like horseback riding and could care less what kind of dirt she gets into. And, you know, in a barn, you can get into a lot of dirt. So I made them relatable in a realistic way and also made a very large age gap.
Mm-hmm. So what are the ages?
They go from 8 to 16.
Okay, yes, yes.
So that's about my characters.
So that really is going to pull in a very wide range of readers. There, you know, different ages. How did you balance that in the writing process to make sure that, you know, you considered that maybe an 8-year-old wouldn't understand what a 16-year-old may? How did you balance all of that?
Well, they would understand the adventure and the mystery, no matter who was doing it.
Mm.
And I wanted to make it realistic. I couldn't have an 8 and a 10-year-old going out into the forest by themselves because I wanted to make it realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly wouldn't let an 8-year-old out into the woods by themselves.
Of course.
On a trail, even, you know, even if it was on a campground, no way.
Mm-hmm.
But the 8 and the 10-year-olds do things that any 10-year-old would do. So they can relate to the characters. A lot of them have older brothers, have older cousins, have older sisters, so they can relate to people of different ages.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa with the older ones saying, oh, my little sister does that. Oh, my younger brother. That sounds just like my brother. So I wanted to try to entice everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, you have definitely included a wide age range as well as, you know, both for girls and boys. It's just mm-hmm. because the boys are kind of instigating this adventure, it isn't just a boys' book. You know, it is good for boys and girls. So what are some of your favorite parts of this story?
My favorite parts? Well, I have to jump straight to the end because they do solve a mystery,
mm-hmm.
but I just couldn't leave it at that. I had to make a surprise discovery. So at the end, they do discover the things they're looking for, but there's a serious twist in the story,
mm-hmm.
and it leaves it open for another book.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think the part, chapter 10, The Midnight Adventure, because it's very eerie, creepy, and they're sneaking out, and you know they have to try to find this final clue, and the only time they can do it is in the middle of the night. And, of course, everybody gets involved in this, but I tried to describe it. I wanted the reader to get that almost Halloween kind of feeling, you know, a little bit creepy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my favorite parts as well.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Sounds wonderful.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Hi there. ReaderViewsKids.com is an amazing website where you can actually read book reviews created by kids themselves. Major reviewers and most online reviewers have adults reviewing children's books. Not only that, adults write the children's books, adults publish the children's books, and adults decide which books the children will read. See where I'm going with this? Sounds like it's a little imbalanced, and ReaderViewsKids has wanted to bring the children back into the picture. Check out ReaderViewsKids.com and read their opinions today. You may be amazed at what they have to say.
And now back to Inside Scoop Live with your host, Juanita Watson.
So, you know, most children's books convey certain morals, values, or messages that the author really hoped to pass on to young readers. Did you have any conscious themes that you were hoping to include in this story?
Not so much in the story,
mm-hmm.
but in the stop and think. Mm-hmm. And there's also a vocabulary section as well. The words are italicized and bolded. through the whole book,
mm-hmm.
and at the end they can look them up, or teachers or parents can. The story itself is just an entertaining, fun story, but the stop and think questions to keep the kids motivated, and also the fact that if you really want to solve something, you can. But I don't suggest every kid go out into the woods, so I did want to make it just an entertaining, fun story.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not going to try to teach morals. I think that's up to the parents.
Yeah.
But I did not put anything offensive in here. As a matter of fact, I didn't even mention holidays because
mm-hmm.
there are so many religions. Maybe somebody's Buddhist or Jewish or Jehovah's Witnesses or anybody who doesn't celebrate things.
Yeah.
So I didn't include any holidays. The descriptions of the kids are just descriptions so that you could put yourself there.
Mm-hmm.
And I did use real descriptions of the real people. But I didn't say their ethnicity or anything. So Joe's got dark hair, dark eyes, and dark skin. Well, anybody might be able to fit that category.
Mm-hmm.
He happens to be Italian.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I've asked kids about that to yourself, they're, yeah, I have that color hair. So,
you know, you mentioned the vocabulary section. This really is an educational aspect of mm-hmm. of your book. Why did you decide to include this? And as a parent, when your kids were younger, did you find it a challenge to find books that would stretch them in that way?
I have to say I didn't really find it a challenge to find books because, honestly, we did so much creativity on our own.
Mm.
I would make up things with them. I would just put, and this is, I'm sure we'll go into this after, this is something that I do with my workshop kids, but I got the idea from home. They had bunk beds. Put a big sheet over the bunk bed and make the kids get in there and ask them, well, where are you? What's the adventure today? So we kind of created our own stories, and then they would go off and read what they wanted to read. Valerie read books about horses.
Mm-hmm.
They had so much imagination and fiction around me that the poor kids wanted to read real stuff when they weren't around the other thing.
No,
I just want to read about horses. Real ones. No more imagination, Mom. I've had it.
That's great. So why don't you tell us a little more about the work you were just kind of touching on it there, the work that you do with schools and reading programs, and then how you use or have used your book, The Secret Cave, to bridge the gap or to be an introduction into what you want to teach children.
Okay. Well, I speak at libraries. I speak at schools. And just recently, Barnes & Noble, I started working with them as well.
Wonderful.
If for anybody who's out there who knows the level that we're at, if you don't have a huge publishing company behind you and you're doing it on your own, getting into Barnes & Noble and being asked back, it's a big deal. It makes you feel good to know that you're doing something that people are interested in.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of a milestone for new authors.
Mm-hmm.
But not that going to a library and speaking to kids is any less fulfilling. As a matter of fact, sometimes it's more fulfilling. What I'll do is I'll go to schools, libraries. I am doing an actual after-school 8-week workshop right now. Go in the first time, give a short reading, a first chapter, ask a stop-and-think question, get their answers, get them going, and then start talking to them about, well, look what you did. You just created a horror story because the White Rocks were ghosts, or you just created a history story because it was an Indian burial ground, so on and so forth. And we start going into imagination, which leads into a little bit of motivation. And I tell them, you know, you just all became authors. And, of course, this goes with, I'm going to tell a 7-year-old, look what you just did. And I'm going to tell a 12-year-old, bet you didn't think you could do that, did you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it depends on the age, the age level. But I'll get into that, a little bit of motivation, telling them to remember what they did today, that it was very motivational, that they used their imagination, and that they could do it. Whether they're good at it or not, look what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And try to tell them to learn that through their life.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll go back and do a writer's workshop where I will actually, in some cases, put the kids literally under a table and do one of those exercises that I used to do with the kids when my kids were little. And, okay, we put a sheet over you. Where are you? What do you hear? What noises do you hear? Are you alone? What's your story? And basically what they're doing is learning to build a story just by their imagination. Sometimes I have them write it or draw it.
Mm-hmm.
Library settings, the after-school programs when you've got 40 kids bouncing off walls, I'll just stick them all under tables. Where are you? No, seriously. They're all hyped up after school. But, you know, that's what I do, and I can continue it into a long workshop or just one or two times. I've recently have spoken to schools about teaching older children as well, like high schoolers.
Oh, great.
And I can use the secret cave, whether you're a child or not, if you want to use your imagination. I could read you a chapter of this book and ask you, what would you do in this next chapter? But you're an adult and you want to write a children's book, so I say, okay. As a matter of fact, that just happened this weekend at Barnes & Noble. I had a couple of adults that wanted to talk about writing, and I said, well, you're going to participate in the Children's Creative Writers Workshop, but do it as an adult. Instead of your imagination that it was you, what would you do as an author?
Mm.
And they all came up with different stories.
That's great.
So that's how I use the book.
Yes. Yes, wonderful. You know, you mentioned motivation a number of times, and I know that I've read a quote that kind of says something to the fact that one of your goals is to have to kind of boost children's self-worth with the work that you're doing. So why do you think it is so important to mix this message of self-worth into what you do?
Well, let's see. On a national show, I'll tell the truth as to why, because I actually just realized why. I was the little kid in school, and I was the picked-on kid in school. I mean, from fifth grade on up, and I wouldn't stand up for myself. And that does something to your self-esteem. I had a wonderful family, wonderful parents, but I just wasn't the type to stand up for myself. I didn't need to at home. I had a great family, so I didn't need to fight older brothers or sisters or anything, older cousins. My parents were well in their mid-40s when I was born, so all my cousins were grown up.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of alone a lot, you know?
Yes.
And when I was older and took some courses in motivation and self-esteem, not just motivation, but self-esteem, I realized how important that was, and I wanted to teach my children that and teach other children that, because without self-esteem, a lot of children get into bad things. They get into drugs, or they get into abusive cycles in their life. And I know I'm getting really serious here, but it's true.
It is true.
You know, If they have that self-worth at a young age, maybe they just can say, no, you know what? I'm worth more than that. I don't need to be a bully or to prove myself, or I don't need to take a drug to prove myself. I can do this or that or the other really well, and I'm going to try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's just so important for every kid.
Yes, absolutely. It's interesting.
And grown-ups.
For sure. It's interesting that you had, you know, such a different experience with your home life, which you say was, you know, very supportive and very good. But then the social activity that you had in school was so opposite from that. Do you think this is something that should be encouraged more or talked about more in school?
I think it is now with the bullying.
Yes.
I think they're really trying to go after the bullies now and to teach them, as well as not allowing it. I mean, I'm 53, almost 54 years old. This is a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
But you carry that. You carry that with you.
I did, and I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it until I had my own children and said, wow, you know, I can't let that happen to them. And it never did, and they never had to actually fight. It was just a matter of walking tall, being, you know, strong, and nobody will bother you. You have that air about you.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it now at 5 foot nothing. But it took a long time. And, but it's okay. I wouldn't change a thing.
Absolutely
wouldn't
not.
Change a thing.
It's part of your path, part of your journey, most definitely. So what is it that you enjoy most about your work as a children's book author?
Oh, I enjoy it. I like every single aspect of it.
You do.
Writing, I do. I like everything. I like writing it. I love creating new things. I love talking to the children.
Yeah.
And I love talking to the grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to talk to the parents. I've just now started, you know, like I said, really talking to older people or people that want to write for children and, that like my message. But also, because I deal so much with imagination, I'm not trying to make them do what I do. Everybody's different.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of real life stories that need to be told. And little boy yesterday said to me, do you ever write nonfiction? And I said, no, I don't know if I have anything interesting in my life that would be worth writing about, but there's a lot of interesting things. As a matter of fact, your mom's book is on my list for next things to read for nonfiction.
Oh, yes.
Because it sounds really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of stories to be told, and I'm just the one that makes up the story.
Yeah.
I make stuff up.
Yes, you're the creative lady.
Yeah, but I like it all.
Mm-hmm.
I like it all. I guess talking to the kids is probably the best part.
Yeah, I would imagine so. That's got to be incredibly rewarding. So you're working on The Secret Cave 2 as we speak?
Mm-hmm. It's in my head right now.
Okay.
I haven't had much of a chance to get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Doing a lot of work, promotional. Just if anybody goes to that calendar events website page, they'll see why.
Yes, but, you're busy.
And I also have some younger children's books that are written and almost completely illustrated. I just haven't decided what I'm going to do with them yet.
Oh.
And yes, they do have a message.
So this really is a budding career for you in the children's book area.
It certainly seems to be.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So what is your website? And I know that you have an extensive amount of information up there that's geared for children as well as parents and teachers. Mm-hmm. So why don't you give us your website address and then tell us what you all have up there.
Okay. It is secretcave1.com, and it's just secretcave1.com.
Mm-hmm.
And my motto for that is you can teach an old dog new tricks, because I did the whole thing myself. And I consider myself kind of an old dog.
It's a great website. You really did a good job.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. I just learned it on my own. Again, that's the creative part.
Yes.
I'm not patting myself on the back. Give me a checkbook and tell me to balance it and see how far I get.
Yeah, right.
So, or give me directions to someplace. It's not
you like
happening.
The right brain.
Oh, yeah, oh, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I think the left side fell asleep. It's sleeping somewhere. But there's everything on there from the first two chapters to a little bit about me. I have an author page that's got pictures of the kids and pictures of my grandson and the dogs and the cats, so that people seeing it will say, oh, she's just a regular person with a family like I have.
Mm-hmm.
And a kids page with lots of animated clip art and questions from the book. I'm working on a game page that should be next. I just need to figure out how to do it. There's an events page that has pictures of places I've been, a calendar page, a press page, which really happy to say is going to start growing again as of today. So those are newspaper articles and things. And, boy, I don't have my computer in front of me, but there's lots of stuff.
Well, you have the special links for parents and teachers. What do you have on those?
It will explain to the parents my goals, what I do at the workshop. So these kids don't want to read that. I don't want to put that all on the first page.
Yeah.
It's boring.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But if the parents or teachers want to go on that, talks about fundraising, you know, the more financial end of it,
mm-hmm.
discounts, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a page called Motivate that I just put some motivational, you can do it kind of thing. I actually put the lyrics to one of my favorite songs on there.
Oh.
That is a motivational song about a person who was accidentally shot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fiction, but shot and is in a wheelchair, and how he's not going to let this deter him, and he's going to be the best he can. And the song is called Best I Can by Queensrÿche.
Oh.
And I put the words to that. So I'm still working on the Motivate page.
Mm-hmm.
But a little bit of everything.
There is. It's a great, great website.
Thank you.
So, you know, before we end the interview here, I also wanted to make sure that you got to mention your love of animals, because I know that you have a strong connection. You've got a side business that I think you make dog cookies, healthy dog cookies. So tell us more.
My daughter has two chihuahuas. Little TJ has a tiny, not very well functioning liver, and she can't eat a lot of things. So I would make dog cookies for my dogs and for her other chihuahua. And we started making healthy, and TJ has a problem that she's very chubby, and she's on the website, Little Pudgy Teej. And I decided, well, let me make something she can eat. I did one called Yammies. They're cookies. They're actually like a cookie. And
mm-hmm.
you could eat them yourself if you like the taste.
Mm-hmm.
And I put sweet potatoes in it and green beans, and one has peas and carrots. That's called Fairy Veggie. And Pizza Roos, which is a pizza cookie, because dogs love pizza.
Oh, yes.
And the other one is, they're called Oh Nutties, and that has, you know, peanut butter and molasses and applesauce. But everything's low fat. Everything's natural. I can't 100% say organic, but I can say natural.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sugar. There's no preservatives. There's nothing added. I use a baby food for the, you know, a healthy baby food, natural baby food, for the flavorings. And
wow.
I make cookies, and they're all vacuum sealed, and a portion of everything goes to animals. And
oh, that's great.
My goal someday is to have my own little organism.
Oh, wonderful.
Help animals.
Like a shelter or something like that?
Well, if I had enough money, of course I would have the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to call it one by one to start out, meaning that the money goes into a fund, and if somebody says, I've got a, you know, a stray cat in my backyard, and she keeps having kittens, or, you know, this person doesn't have enough money to spay their dog, that maybe I could help that.
Help them out. Mm-hmm.
Help animals. Doesn't have to be dogs or cats, but, you know, it seems to be where a lot of the problems lie. And then I've jumped on the pit bull bandwagon as well for, you know, not fighting animals, so on and so forth. Just anything to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do have a connection to animals.
Oh, yes, you do. You do. I think there's links to your other website from Secret Cave One. Okay.
On the front page, it's called puppylovecookies.com.
Oh, that's a great title.
Thanks.
Wonderful. So, Lisa, our time is kind of coming to an end here. And before I let you go, I just want to offer you the last minute to share any final thoughts about your book, your life, your animals, anything you like.
Well, just to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for your time.
Sure.
Been wonderful. And I just hope that I can continue to reach children as well as adults to get that message across that it's not just your creativity. I want to go further into that, that you can do anything. And if somebody who is having a lot of struggles could get a book going and promoted and achieve their dreams, that's so important. People achieve their dreams because then you're happy.
Yes.
And I just want to see everybody. Oh, trust me, I still have plenty of struggles ahead of me. But it's called life, you know. And that's really it. You know, hope I can continue to entertain and enlighten.
Yes, absolutely.
Throughout the rest of my life.
Great final thoughts and a wonderful book and a great message. So thanks so much for this interview today. It's been wonderful talking with you. Best to you, and I hope you have much success in the future.
Thank you so much, and the very same to you.
Well, thank you, Lisa. You take care.
I will.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. There you go, listeners. What a great interview with Lisa Lano. The book, the children's book, The Secret Cave, it can be purchased through local and online booksellers. Her website, once again, secretcave1.com. And if you'd like to read a recent online interview and book review, you can also go to readreviews.com. So we certainly encourage you to check out The Secret Cave. Thank you so much for listening to Inside Scoop Live today. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.